You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
It's time.
It's time.
Time to get in the zone.
Time to get in the zone.
With the 49ers Web Zone.
This is the No Huddle Podcast.
With Al and Brian.
What is up? You're listening to another episode of the 49ers Web Zone No Huddle Podcast, a part of the Odyssey Network. I'm Brian Rennick. He's Al Sacco. There's a few of you who are watching right now. It's Al and I were talking earlier. This 49ers team, it's a content machine, but it certainly feels like that machine has taken a little bit of a break over the past week or so. It was spring break for everybody else. Maybe the 49ers thought, hey, you know what? We'll take our own spring break. Not a whole lot going on in 49er land, but I know that Al, you wanted to take a look at something that I think a lot of 49er fans are really, really hoping the 49ers will address their offensive line in the upcoming draft. And it kind of seems like we may be throwing a little bit of cold water on that. What do you think?
Well, this is where my mind is right now. Because I always say I don't know what other people think about, but I'm usually thinking about football. Like, that's usually what's going through my mind when I'm just walking down the street, driving in my car or whatever. I'm usually thinking about football. So what's been on my mind lately is, again, I feel like the fans, they have every right to think this. I think they're right, are really sort of have their blinders on. This team needs to address the offensive line. Now, I don't know if the team feels that way. We'll get into that. But where my head is, yeah. There are positions on the offensive line I think they do need to address, where specifically I think they need to address. Everybody's talking about, like, McKibbitz, right? You got to upgrade right tackle. I can't get my mind off of center. Thinking about a good center in this offense, and Alex Mack, who's been in Kyle Shanahan's offense, and Weston Richburg. And I want to go over kind of what the Niners have done in the offensive line since Shanahan got here. Have they invested enough? Draft picks, free agents, trades. What have they done? What have the trends been? This is where my mind is spinning with right now, because it looks to me like Shanahan is completely content to run it back with the same five if he needs to. That's sort of, at least for this year, that's sort of what they're set up to do. You have Williams, you have Banks, you have Brendel, you have Feliciano, who he's been talking a lot of, you know, good shit about. And then you have McKibbitz, who just signed an extension. So I think he's like, all right, we can run it back with these guys unless somebody we love, BPA, is there in the first round or whatever. So what have they done, Brian, since they got here? What have the trends been? So if you look at each position, and I guess 2017 is kind of tough because that was the first year, you know, they were kind of retooling and figuring stuff out. But you go into 2018, what was the big move that they made? Weston Richburg. So they signed him to a five-year, $47 million deal. Now, that didn't really work out because he got injured. He played a couple of years. He had 28 games in 2018, 2019. But when you look at the trend with center for them, Daniel Kilgore played in the original season in 2017. He was service. He's a serviceable dude. And then Shanahan says, okay, I need my Alex Mack. Not that Richburg is Alex Mack, but I need my guy. I need my center. So I'm going to go out. We're going to sign Weston Richburg. But he had injury issues. He wasn't there that long. We had to go through 2020, which was Ben Garland, Ronis Grasu, and Dan Brunskill in that crazy 2020 COVID year. But then they get Alex Mack for a year. It was the last year of his career, but they did go out and get him again. You know, he's a big name dude. But then the last two seasons, they've gone with Jake Brendel, who's been serviceable. He's a serviceable guy. But Brendel's 33. Brendel does not make a lot of money. I think if they got rid of him, it's like a $2,000 dead cap hit, or $2 million.
$2 million.
Dead cap hit. Wish it was 2000. Not much. So I'm kind of wondering this year, we're thinking about tackle, but is maybe center the position they're going to go for early? That's kind of where my mind is right now.
Yeah. You know, this team, I feel like Kyle Shanahan has had a reputation, and the reputation is this: I need two good tackles and I need a center, and I will pull a guy off the street for guard if I need to. But that's where I'm going to invest my money or resources, I should say. And that really played out the first, I would say, five seasons of this tenure, right? Because like you said, they invest heavily in center with Weston Richburg, and Richburg played well. And center is an important position in this offense, because specifically in Kyle Shanahan's offense, the protection calls are the responsibility of the center. They do not fall on the quarterback. And that is a philosophy that Shanahan has that I don't think he's ever going to change. In his mind, he wants his quarterback not to have to worry about protection, so that he can just kind of go out there and play a little bit more free and loose in terms of, you know, not having too much on his plate. And I thought it was interesting. Rich Madrid, who is a staple on 49ers Twitter, actually kind of posted about this today, where he was pointing out that in this Shanahan offense, but in the McVay tree of it, right? So Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur, right? They have backed off that center calls the protections and have put a little bit more on the plate of the quarterback. And Rich has pointed out how there have been some advantages for those quarterbacks. And he was using a clip from Jordan Love against the Cowboys in the playoffs, where Love recognized a blitz and so he used his cadence to identify who the rusher was going to be. And in so doing, got a little bit more information and was able to throw a touchdown against the Cowboys. And Rich was pointing out that that's something that the McVay side of the Shanahan tree does. They put a little bit more responsibility on the quarterback. I don't think Shanahan is interested in that. I think he wants to continue to have his center be the one who's making the protection calls in this offense, which makes center arguably the second most important position on the line behind, you would say, left tackle, because left tackle is always important because it protects your quarterback's blind side. And so, you know, they invest in Richburg and he plays well, but then he has that horrific injury and it really just derails the rest of his career. And then they eventually got Alex Mack, but it was at the end of his career. So he played one good season. And then he was gone, right? And so Brendel has been the, you know, besides Richburg, the longest tenured center under the Kyle Shanahan regime. And it just certainly feels like it's not necessarily a matter of him being one of the better centers in the league, but rather just Shanahan is comfortable with him. And so is Chris Forster, who is the offensive line coach. Forster worked with Brendel in Miami. He's the one that brought him over. And so it, like I said, it just seems like a marriage of, you know, it works, right? Like
convenience.
It's convenience. There it is. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. And so I don't know. It's interesting to me. Like, we've seen them spend money on center. Would they spend a first round pick on a center? I don't know. Callie Young in the chat says, if Jackson Powers Johnson falls, do we select him? I mean, I think he'd be incredible. I couldn't tell you whether or not they would, because we've never seen it, right? We haven't seen them address center in the first or the second round, right? The highest interior offensive lineman they've ever drafted is Aaron Banks, and he's acquitted himself, but he's not a superstar by any stretch of the imagination.
He may not get a second contract.
Yeah, and he may not, unless it's a team-friendly deal. But, I mean, at the same time, we saw what happened to the guard market in free agency. this year, and it went absolutely bananas. So, you know, it might not be somebody that they bring back just because they're like, we're not going to pay what, I mean, look, right. They let Laken Tomlinson go, right? Because yeah. They didn't want to pay what Laken Tomlinson wanted. And now Laken Tomlinson's deal looks like a steal, right? Not from play, just from the contract itself. Especially considering that, like we said earlier, a couple episodes ago, Robert Hunt got $100 million.
So what he got. Insane.
Yeah, insanity. So I think it's important, but it just seems like Kyle Shanahan believes that he is smart enough to scheme around an average offensive line. And so he doesn't want to waste valuable assets on the offensive line and would rather spend that money and those resources elsewhere, because he believes that he is the rising tide that lifts all boats. Right. And he can scheme around it, but we've seen in the Super Bowl, it's not working. So
yeah.
It's scary.
I'd like to see them. We mentioned the interior offensive line. Banks may not be back since the last year of his deal. And then you have a 33-year-old Brendel and a 32-year-old Feliciano pretty much year to year. I'd like to see them invest in like a center that's going to be with Brock for a long time mm-hmm. and build that interior because he's a smaller quarterback and, you know, like build how they did with Drew Brees type thing. But you brought up the guards, Bri. So looking at this too, left guard, there's not a lot of a sample size because they traded for Laken Tomlinson. He played, I think it was 5 years, and then they went to Aaron Banks, who they drafted in the second round. So they've kind of had two guys there. So have they invested in that position? Well, they made a really good trade for Tomlinson. And then they did invest. They invested in Aaron Banks. The second round pick is absolutely a fucking investment, right? I mean, they did.
Oh, big time.
But on the right side, I'm convinced, again, if you and I suited up and showed up to training camp, we'd have a shot anyway. 2017, you know, inherited, but Brandon Fusco, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. 2018, Mike Person. 2020, 21, Daniel Brunskill. 2022, Spencer Burford and Brunskill. They rotated. And 2023 was Burford and Feliciano. Yep. Just dudes. And just I'm a big Daniel Brunskill. I like Daniel Brunskill. Can play everywhere. Good, you know, good player.
Donald's father.
Yeah, did great against Donald. But at the end of the day, have they invested in the right guard position? Absolutely fucking not. It's kind of just been kind of, you know, random dudes. And you made the argument. Again, there are numerous plays that happen that cause you to lose a game. But you look at the Chris Jones batted pass against Mike Person. You look at the play in overtime this past Super Bowl with Burford missing the block. That position that they've kind of put duct tape on and been like, whatever, you could argue has cost them two Super Bowls. Absolutely. So do you want to maybe invest the higher draft pick? I want to talk about the draft picks they've done in the O-line soon, but it's a fair argument for the inside.
Well, and you know, I think it's interesting because, like I said, as fans, I'm pretty sure the lion's share of 49er fans are in the same boat that we're saying O-line, right? Like upgrade this O-line, upgrade right tackle, upgrade right guard, upgrade center, right? The only spot on the line that you don't have to, you couldn't stand to upgrade is Trent Williams, because you can't upgrade from Trent Williams. He's arguably the best left tackle in the history of the NFL. But Trent Williams is what, 36, yeah. Or at least he's going to play at his age 36 season.
Yeah.
In 2024. He's not long for this team. He's not long for this league. Even though he is an athletic freak, even though, you know, he had what amounts to 2 years off in Washington when he battled his cancer diagnosis and Washington really bungled that situation. But he's not long for this team. So you need an heir apparent as well, which doesn't seem like is on the roster. So you could make an argument that they could draft four or five offensive linemen in this draft or within the next two drafts because they need to. But the question is, are they going to? And I don't know that they are. I just don't know that they are. You know, the last big investment they made in the offensive line was Mike McGlinchey, and they let him walk after his fifth year option. And he didn't live up to the billing of a top 10 pick. My question is, can this team scout offensive linemen? I don't know. I don't know. I don't have an answer to that, but I think one of the interesting things is Steph Sanchez. Shout out to Steph. She's amazing. She has her 49 Carats podcast. She has the Bully Ball podcast with Jason Aponte. She also puts together every year, she does her draft sheet where she tracks all the visits that the 49ers have with players, you know, that are reported by other people or even just herself. But she also tracks, and this is important for 49er fans to pay attention to, the 49ers always draft one or two of the players that they bring in for top 30 visits. It's a guarantee. It's a slam dunk. Last year, it was Cameron Latu, Braden Willis, and there was one other, and I can't remember. They drafted three of the guys that they brought in on the top 30. And so she has been tracking top 30 visits, right? So these are the visits that teams can have that bring in draft picks from all over the country for official top 30 visits. You only get 30 of them. That doesn't count what they call the local pro day, which allows teams to bring in as many players as they want in their, essentially their local area. But these are top 30 visits with players from across the country. And there have been 10 top 30 visits so far as of April 1st. So a third of their top 30 visits. Al, do you know how many offensive linemen they've had in for top 30 visits so far?
I'm going to guess one.
No, it's zero. They've had zero offensive linemen on top 30 visits. Now, again, it's April 1st. They have 20 more. So we're not saying that they aren't. But as it stands right now, they haven't brought anyone in. And so as much as we think, hey, offensive line is an issue and you need upgrades for 2024, I don't think this team believes that. And it'll be interesting to see what happens and how the draft board falls at 31, because they may zig when we think they're going to zag. And I'm interested to see the reaction of fans if they don't bring anybody in.
Well, who have they drafted since the regime came in? 2018, they took McGlinchey. So they did invest in that right tackle. They went kind of McGlinchey to McKivitz. Mm-hmm. 2019, Justin Skuel was a sixth-round pick. Mm-hmm. 2020, McKivitz, who said he's a fifth-round pick. 21 was Banks in the second round and Jalen Moore in the fifth. Then 2022 was Burford in the fourth and Zakello in the sixth. So they've taken guys, you know, they've somewhat invested, again, that right guard spot, whatever, but you know, other ways they kind of have, but you bring up an interesting point that Randy in the chat asked. I think this kind of brings me to what I want to talk about with Purdy. And for the next 10 years, do the 49ers change the type of wide receiver from yak focus to route running, someone like McConkey or Purcell? So Brian's been talking about that a ton on the show, that he thinks, you know, with Debo, part of the reason Debo was brought in is because you had Garoppolo in there and he's going to throw, you know, your little check downs or whatever, and you want the yak guys. Purdy's a different kind of dude. You know, Purdy's timing and route running, and do you want to bring in more guys like that, guys like Ayuk, to help support him? And what's really interesting about that, I think, is we're talking about, like, these top 30 visits. How many receivers were in those top 30, Brian? You know that?
Three so far.
So that's kind of – it's 3 out of 10. That's kind of so far. That's kind of interesting to me, because the way that I feel about it is I think they can go anywhere with their first round pick. I literally think they can take any position. Well, they're not going to take a tight end.
And they're not going
to
take a,
it looks like they're going to get Brock Wright to be their second tight end. And you have Kittle. They're not going to do that. They're not going to take a quarterback. They won't take a running back this soon. Other than that, they won't take a linebacker. But you could sell me on corner. You could sell me on defensive tackle. You could sell me on defensive end. You can sell me on center, tackle, and wide receiver. Reason I think that is because whether you sign Ayuk or not, there's all these rumors about Ayuk I know right now. And if they do trade Ayuk, God forbid, that's a major need. But let's not even go there right now. Especially for this year. But regardless, even if you don't trade him, you have Juwan Jennings for one more year. And then you have probably Debo for one more year. Is probably what it looks like. And then you have jack shit. You have nothing. So this is arguably one of the better wide receiver class in a while. I mean, there's tons of receivers in here. There's tons of really good players. I think you can get them throughout the draft. And the Niners would be, you know, remiss from not getting one or two in this draft. Would they take one in the first round? Yeah, I fucking think they would.
Yeah.
If there's a guy there that they love that drops, or that Kyle's like, you know, this can be my next Ayuk, or just the next guy to really bring us into the second window with this team as we build around Purdy, as we build around hopefully Ayuk, as we build around Bosa and Warner, and these other guys kind of age out, would they take a wide receiver in the first round? Yeah, I think they would. They do. I don't think that's off table by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. And think about it, right? Like, if they go into this next season with Ayuk and Debo, right? If they don't trade either one of those guys, and I think the likelihood that they trade one is pretty low. I'm not going to make it zero because I don't think any player's really ever off the table for them. But I love Juwan Jennings, right? But Juwan Jennings is a limited player. He's great at what he does, but he's limited. But if someone like a Brian Thomas Jr. or someone like a A.D. Mitchell or even a Xavier Worthy were to fall, and I think Xavier Worthy probably is a second round pick. I don't think Kyle Shanahan would go for Xavier Worthy. But if one of those guys fell, I mean, imagine a top three wide receiver of Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, and Brian Thomas Jr. or A.D. Mitchell, right? And then you're like, oh man, now we're cooking with straight gas, right? Because now you've got Christian McCaffrey. I mean, you could run 11 personnel and absolutely just put other teams in hell because they've got to cover George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, and then whatever receiver that they draft. But I also think that there's a couple wide receivers that they could probably have in the second or third round that I think would still upgrade that wide receiver three position. One of those is a guy that they brought in on a top 30 visit, and that's Malachi Corley, who's a wide receiver from Western Kentucky. A lot of people view him kind of in the mold of a Debo Samuel. He's kind of a thicker guy, you know, great with the ball in his hands. Another guy that I actually drafted in a mock draft that I was that I did today is Washington, the wide receiver from Virginia. Another guy that I think is a bit underrated right now. And so, yeah, I absolutely think that to me, and I said it before, I think they're going to start transitioning to less of a run first offense and more of either a balanced offense or even we're going to live more in the passing game than the run game. Because, you know, I think that he finally has a quarterback that he trusts. And that also brings up the idea of, do you invest more in the interior of the offensive line for your short quarterback than you do elsewhere? And so that's another thing where I think it would be smart of them, whether or not they do it. I don't know, but, I think we're going to start to see a bit of a transition in the way that this team builds its offense because of Brock Purdy. And I'm just excited to see kind of what it looks like.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting because, you know, we keep saying that they can go anywhere. And our buddy Jason Apani wrote an article for Niners Nation I was reading today. And he had just been looking at some mock drafts, which guys were doing. And Lance Zierlein of NFL Network had the Niners taking edge from Missouri, Darius Robinson, with the first round pick. Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports had them taking cornerback Ennis Rakestraw from Missouri at 31.
Missouri, yeah.
When we talked about corner, there's like nobody signed it for this year. So, you know, that's a position that, again, if you told me they're taking them in the first round, I'd be like, yeah, absolutely, they probably are. And then Bleacher Report had Xavier Leggett, wide receiver from South Carolina. And Malik Washington was the guy you were thinking
Malik,
of.
Malik, yeah. Yep.
From Virginia. So they can go anywhere, Brian. You know, and I'm still waiting for this Lenore contract. Feel like, how are we not resigning Lenore? I know this stuff happens later in the summer. And they've both been really quiet. Like, you know, Ayuk, there's a lot of chirping and everything like that. Ward and Lenore have been really quiet. And Hufanga is going to be because he's coming off an injury. It's not like he's going to be like sign me. But those two guys, I thought for sure something would either be worked out or we'd be hearing stuff about it. Maybe it'll just get dropped on us. But
yeah,
we'll see. Yeah, and Randy says he loves the guy. Yeah, you know, I can't blame you. You're bringing a guy like that. You know, again, you're setting your quarterback up, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years with a weapon. And I feel like that could be on the table.
Yeah, 6'3", 225, runs like at four, I think at high 4.3s or low 4.4s. Yeah. Sign me up. I'm in. I'm in for that. For sure.
I love that speed because Purdy's going to, you know, not that Purdy has a Josh Allen arm, but Purdy takes chances. Purdy throws the ball downfield.
Yeah.
And the Niners really don't have a guy that can take the top off the defense. They tried that with Danny Gray. That's clearly not working out. They don't have anybody else can do that. Jennings is not going to do that. Jennings runs like a 5.8 or whatever the hell he runs. I don't know. It's really slow.
I legitimately, like, but I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I'll look it up, but I believe that Juwan Jennings ran, it was either like a 4.6 or a 4.7 at the combine, which is why he was a seventh round pick, you know, like,
yeah, it was slower. It was just a slower receiver.
It is what it is.
You know, but like Debo is not a guy who's going to win a go route. And Ayuk is, you know, great route runner. You know, obviously he had the yards per reception was second in the NFL. So he's a guy you can make plays with downfield. But if you just have a guy who could just take the top off of everything, that's going to threaten the defense, it's going to stretch the defense, especially this year while you have all your kind of Avengers in place. You just get a dude who's going to take the top off of that and let Debo and Ayuk and Kittle and McCaffrey, you know, do whatever else they're going to do. Yeah, it can make the offense like really, really deadly.
Yeah.
So that's the thing too. Like, not that I don't want to call it like you're just going to draft like, oh, we have a new toy because we have all these other pieces. Because I think it needs to be a long-term fit.
100%. Yeah.
But you do have, we keep talking about how they're sort of retooling while they're still competitive, right? Mm-hmm. So you do have the luxury this year where you can bring in a guy like that who's super fast and can take the top off the defense. And you think, yeah, in 2 years he could be a starter, but this year we just need you to play a role. Just get down the field. You know what I mean? Like, to bring it in with all these other guys, it could really help open up the offense. So that's what I'm hoping they're doing. But this is really the first draft where I feel like I don't know what the fuck they're going to do. I don't have any idea. So it's going to be fun in that regard. And we're going to, you know, we're going to look at it and we're going to critique it. And people, again, have so many different thoughts just in the first round of where they should go. So it's good. Stuff like that to me is so much fun. The first round pick, you're like, where are they going to go? What are they going to do? And what does this mean for not only this season, but for the next 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
That's why I kind of like the Brock Wright signing. That's his name, right? The tight end from Detroit. Says
yeah.
It was like, they offered a 3-year, whatever, $12 million deal or whatever. Those are kind of some of the contracts I thought they would offer. Not that he's a superstar, but if he signs that contract, that's your second tight end for like the next 3 years. So that's what I thought about more of those deals would be like, yeah, we're getting somebody to help as we transition from some of these other guys. Mm-hmm. And it was, and it was more 1-year deals with most of the people. So I thought that was a cool signing for them. I liked it. And we'll see, the draft is going to build on that. So,
you know, what I thought was interesting is the contract offer that they signed Brock Wright to, which is, like you said, 4 years, $12 million. It's 3 years, $12 million. It's the same exact contract that Charlie Werner signed with the Falcons. Mm-hmm. So to me, that tells you, A, they were done with Charlie Werner. And B, I think, you know, I looked it up. I looked it up. Charlie Werner had, in his entire career with the San Francisco 49ers, Charlie Werner had, I brought it up. I have it right here. A total in 4 seasons of 15 targets.
Straight blocking.
15 targets. I was like, no, that can't be right. So I looked it up, and it is 100% correct. He had 15 targets, and he had 11 receptions for 120 yards and 0 touchdowns. If you compare that with Brock Wright had, where'd we go? Got to bring it up.
I got you. 12 catches, 18 catches, 13 catches in his 3 years.
There you go. Yeah. But also total. I think he had 7 touchdowns, if I'm not mistaken.
He did. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So 7
touchdowns. 2021, 4-1. Yep.
Yeah. 424 yards on 43 receptions. And 7 receiving touchdowns. So that seems like an upgrade for exactly what Werner signed with the Falcons. So again, a shrewd move. Also signing him to a contract that the Lions likely aren't going to match. But they still have, I think they still have one more day. So
till Wednesday.
So they have until tomorrow to match. No word on whether they will or not. So we'll see on that. But what that does is again, it it gives them a floor at tight end two, right? Where now you can still allow Latu and Willis to develop and not feel like, damn, we've got to do something at tight end two. So I think it's a shrewd move and, you know, to me, an upgrade over Charlie Warner for exactly what Charlie Warner signed for. But hey, also good for Charlie Warner, who is just going home, right? He's from Georgia.
Yeah.
He went to Georgia. And so kudos to him. He gets to go play, you know, in his own backyard. But also, I did look it up. I was right. Juwan Jennings ran a 4.72 40 at the there combine.
So it wasn't quite a 5.8, but
yeah.
But you know what else?
But for a wide receiver, that's
it's pretty slow.
Yikes! Yeah,
but he's been a clutch dude. He's been a clutch, 100%. Super clutch guy for the Niners. 100%. Might have been Super Bowl MVP if they won. So, but you know what else? This Brock Wright thing tells me they missed on Cam Latu. That's what that tells me. And as we go into a draft that is going to shape or play a big part in shaping, again, the next 5 years, you signed Javon Hargrave because you missed on Javon Kinlaw. You signed Leonard Floyd and traded for Chase Young because you missed on Drake Jackson. You're signing Brock Young because you missed on Cam Latu. There's other examples here we can give. So while they've certainly done really well with some of their draft picks the last 3 years, we've talked about, you know, and there's been some misses there. So you're going to have misses. Every team is going to have misses. But they're in a situation this year and next year where they got to hit on two or three dudes, like big 100%. Time in each draft. 100%. Like, you're not going to hit on 11 picks. It's not going to happen. You're probably not even going to hit on 6 picks. It's probably not going to happen. But you got to really hit on two or three dudes in each of the next two drafts. You can't have a draft with last year's draft doesn't really look very good, you know, the year before other than Purdy type thing. You know, like, you got to start hitting on some dudes now to build this. And you know, we'll see. They've been a really good front office. Again, they deserve the benefit of the doubt. But it's why, again, I keep saying this draft is so exciting to me, dude, because it's huge. And I understand, all drafts are huge. Well, some are more important than others, especially when you're a loaded team and you're trying to get depth. This draft is just
a unique position that they're in.
Gigantic for the 49ers as they build to the Brock Purdy era. And I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Yeah. But let's not forget, though, that last year they did draft a Super Bowl record holder, Jake Moody. The only player in NFL history to have multiple 50-plus yard field goals and did it in the same game. No big deal.
Oh, no, Lord. Deal.
My pep talks worked.
Also, Jake Moody missed an extra point.
And missed an extra point, which would have won the game. But we'll blame Spencer Burford.
Yeah, I can't.
By the way, I looked up Juwan Jennings on Mock Draftable, and when compared to other draft eligible wide receivers, his 4.72 40 was in the second percentile, and his 29-inch vertical jump was also in the second percentile. So not what you would call an explosive athlete, but again, I love Juwan Jennings. I love what he does.
He makes tough catches, man.
I love his mentality. I think he's underutilized in some trick plays because he was a quarterback. I feel like they should use him more to throw a little bit just to, again, get some pretty sweet trick plays in there. But no, I love what Juwan did. Like I said, I love what he does. I love what he brings. And, you know, I think he's worth the tender that they gave him. But again, it is just a 1 year tender. So I don't know how they feel about him moving forward as well. But like you said, you know, this draft is, I don't know that there are many, if any other team in the same position that the 49ers are going into this draft, which is drafting for depth on a top loaded roster that is ready to compete for a Super Bowl next season, but also drafting for the future because the top of that roster isn't long for this roster either. Right.
Agent roster.
I don't think there's really any other team that is in that same position, which I think makes them one of the more intriguing teams in the draft. Maybe not necessarily for, you know, are they going to get a superstar or whatever, but more like, what is their plan? You know, because I think we are going to learn a lot about this team and how Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch view this team just simply by the way that they draft. Here in 3 weeks or so. So it's exciting. It's fun. I love draft season. I'm not, you know, by any means, I am not a talent evaluator or anything like that. I will leave that up to the people that, that, you know, whose job that is. But I do love, I love Dane Brugler's The Beast draft guide when it comes out, PFF's draft guide. You know, I love to do mock drafts. It's all fun. I did one today that I thought was pretty awesome in mine. Kool-Aid McKinstry fell to 31. So that was my pick at 31. And I don't think that's a far, I don't think that is out of the realm of possibility because there are some concerns of, for McKinstry when it comes to, injury concerns. But I went cornerback and then, the tackle out of Yale, Kieran, and I'm not even going to pretend to pronounce his name, AMEGADJIE. And then guard out of South Dakota State, Mason McCormick in round three. And then I traded with the Jaguars. And then I took Malik Washington in the fourth round, Tyrone Tracy, the running back from Purdue in the fourth round, Christian Boyd, the defensive tackle out of Northern Iowa in the fourth round, Jaheim Bell, who I think could be a 49er, very much a Debo Samuel type player, but at the tight end position. And then Tanner Bordellini, the center from Wisconsin in the sixth round, Omar Brown, a safety out of Nebraska in the sixth round, and then Dallas Gant, a linebacker, out of Toledo in the seventh round. One of my favorite mock drafts I've done so far. There will be plenty more. Not that I'm going to talk about all of them, but yeah, it's, you know, it's
O-line heavy. So, I mean, you went O-line heavy too.
Yeah. Well, I only two, just that tackle in the second round, guard in the third round. Oh yeah. And center
in the late, round. Right?
Yeah.
Brian,
yeah.
I know your drafts better than you, dude.
I know.
That's just how intently I'm. I just love I hang that. On every word
like
you
it.
Say.
I love it. I love it.
Hey, did we talk about the kickoffs yet?
We haven't.
Oh, I love that shit. Like, usually I hate the rule changes and I bitch about them. I love the kickoffs because the kickoff had just become ceremonial, gets kicked out of the back of the end zone. Now, like, every single one is going to get returned. You know, I think it was like 93%. I saw statistics in, like, what is it? The USFL or whatever the hell it is. Mm-hmm. They do that and get returned. So it's going to be a play that constantly happens. Kickoff returners are going to be a thing again. It's going to change games. Yeah. You could get creative with it because it's not, you know, you're blocking within 5 yards of the defense. You could do all kinds of shit. You could pull. Like, it's going to be really, really exciting to see. Debo, I think, I don't know if they'll use him there all the time, but in big spots, you just give Debo a seam. I mean, that shit is so exciting to me. It's one of the few rule changes where I'm actually, like, really jazzed about.
I saw the initial tweet that talked about it, and it just listed all of the rules, and I was like, give me a fucking break. Like,
it's gimmicky.
You're doing way too much. Like, just eliminate the kickoff at this point. If this is what we're doing, and it's like there's 65 new rules just for the kickoff, like, let's just eliminate it. But the more I looked into it, the more I thought, yeah, this is exciting because
it's gonna be fun.
It limits the high speed collisions, which I think is ultimately what they're trying to do. But still allows for the possibility of returns. The only question I have for you, Al, is are you going to miss the surprise onside kicks?
That's one of the things I thought was stupid, like, because that is part of, like, the chess match of it all, right? Like,
yeah,
to be able to do that. So now it's
you have to declare. You have to declare.
Right, to declare your intention. Like, I think that's pretty stupid.
Yeah,
I didn't love that. But
are there going to be any onside kicks?
Yeah, it's just, to me, I was like, again, why? But I just like that you're putting it back in the game. It'll take a little while to get used to because it does, you know, you watch it now and it's like, okay, this looks a little gimmicky when they do it on USFL or whatever. But like, as we get used to it, I think it's going to be a cool thing. And again, it's just going to be exciting. You know, I liked when Devin Hester was a thing. It was exciting. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Devin Hester is going to be a Hall of Famer because of his
kickoff. Yeah. Like, and you know what? If you play fantasy, like I do, I'm obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. Now, when you draft a defense, like, pay attention to the kick returner. So I have the Steelers in my dynasty league and they just picked up Cordarrelle Patterson. I'm like, yeah, dude, like, all right, let's go. You know, I like that. It's just more fun to me. I don't know. So we'll see how it happens. You know, when I actually get on the field and how things work, but I'm actually excited. You know, I'm actually excited about it. So.
And that's another thing I think to pay attention to for the 49ers in the draft is, are they going to draft a player with kick return ability? Because right now they don't have anybody on the roster to do it. Not just kick return, but punt return. And so, you know, there are a few guys out there like Isaac Grendo, the halfback out of Louisville, who's just an ace kick returner. So it'll be interesting to see if they end up taking a guy that fits their offense, either as a running back or a wide receiver, but also is a kick returner of note in the college game.
Right now it's Ronnie Bell, pay
attention to. Yeah, true. Yeah.
You know, unless you put Debo back there sporadically, but what was the other thing I want to say to you?
I don't think Ronnie Bell is necessarily a threat to take it to the house.
No, I think they need kick returns. Oh, yeah. So last night, not to get off football, but I've never watched Caitlin Clark play anything. Like, I knew who she was just because, you know, she's famous and all over ESPN and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I decided last night, I'm like, let me watch this girls game, Iowa at LSU, thinking like I'm going to have it on for 3 minutes and be like, oh yeah, she's got a good shot and change it. She's fucking unbelievable. Yeah. Like, I turned it on and she dribbles behind her back and just like cans a three from almost like half court. She's got great vision. She's just, she's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I watched the whole game.
Stephanie Curry.
who can pass like magic or like, like, I can't believe it. Like, I'm really thinking like, okay, like she's going to have a good shot, but who cares? I was like, holy shit. And I sat and watched the whole game. Crazy. And I saw it had like 12.3 million.
I was just about to say, did you see how many viewers it had? 12.3 million.
Which is more than, I'd have to look it up, but more than a lot of significant sporting events. Like,
it was more than the NBA finals last year.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. More than the NBA for finals. Basketball, boys or girls. Cause I think the NBA's gotten crazy stale, at least to me. And there aren't a lot of stars in college basketball. So it's like, you know, it's more teams than stars.
Well, that's the thing. I feel about the women's game is that, you know, they are more focused on the fundamentals and they are more focused on it on the team aspect of the game than the men's side, right? Where the men's side is all about iso ball and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more aesthetically, legitimately, it's more aesthetically pleasing to watch a girls game just because, again, it just reminds me of what basketball used to be. You know, I think the WNBA, right, is really probably going to take off in the next couple of years because of
Caitlin Clark
and Angel Reese and was it the Haley Van Lith,
right?
Yeah, and Paige Buchers from UConn. Yeah, it's the women's game is in good hands, and it's a lot of fun to watch. I like it.
Yeah, it was great. It was cool. It was a good change of pace, and I was like, I thought I would watch for 3 minutes and change the station. I literally watched the entire game. Like it was crazy. So good on them, man. It was awesome. Yeah. It was really cool.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right, man. That's all we got, I think. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Subscribe where you get your podcasts. And please also subscribe on YouTube to the 49ers Web Zone station. Cause you could look at me and Brian. Why would you not want to do that?
Look at this.
Bald is beautiful, even though we wear hats all the time.
We always wear hats.
Come watch us.
I love it.
All right, everybody. Thanks.
Later.
9-0-3. 1-2-3.
Hey! 2400 Sports is an Odyssey company.